Lecture 24, Conclusion, The France of Louis XIV.
In the last few lectures, we reviewed the rising power of the French crown during the first two-thirds of the 17th century, and also the kind of resistance that this increase in royal power generated, resistance which was met, which was encountered among the judges of the French law courts, among the nobles, the French aristocracy, and also among the peasantry, the French common people. However, we also pointed to the fact that during the last third of the 17th century and thereafterwards, France was, domestically speaking, a much more peaceable kingdom. And therefore, it seems to me, this brings us to put the problem a little bit differently, to the question of why Louis XIV was able to govern so much more effectively than his predecessors, Louis XIII and Henry IV. Because when Cardinal Mazarin, Louis XIV's former chief advisor, died in the year 1661, what is interesting is that Louis then declared himself to be first minister, and he went on to rule his kingdom, he went on to rule France, for another 54 years without a single serious domestic threat to the stability of his regime. It was really quite extraordinary, given all that had happened in France in the later 16th and early 17th centuries. Except for the desperate revolt of the so-called Camisards between 1702 and 1710, there were no Huguenot revolts during the later stages of Louis's reign. And even the Camisards, it seems to me, represent something rather different. They represent not really an assault on the power of the crown, but rather the defensive last gasp of a dying cause. The wars against the Camisards were really rather like the so-called Indian Wars in the United States during the later 19th century, in which an embattled and disenfranchised minority sought, unsuccessfully in both cases, to preserve its own way of life from the constant encroachments of an intolerant majority. In fact, the similarities go even further than that. It seems that the Camisards believed that if they wore special blessed shirts, rather akin to the blessed shirts worn by the so-called ghost dancers on the northern plains in the 1880s and 1890s, they'd be invulnerable to bullets. In both cases, the faith proved misplaced, and both sets of rebels were slaughtered by the soldiers in question. But to go back to 17th century France, not only were there no problems with the Huguenots, except for this unusual uprising of the Camisards, there were far fewer peasant revolts in later 17th century France than had been the case during the period 1635 to 1660. Moreover, there were also no revolts at all by parlementaires, by magistrates of the law courts, after the fashion of the Fronde of 1648 to 49. Indeed, what we see happening in the later 17th century is Louis XIV steadily paring back the powers and prerogatives of the law courts. In 1665, Louis formally removed the Parlement's title of sovereign court, and in 1673, Louis decided and ruled that henceforth the Parlement would only be allowed to protest royal edicts, proposed legislation, after registering them. The Parlement had lost its right of protesting against legislation and demanding changes before it would register the laws. There were also, in the later, from the later 17th century onwards, no more significant revolts by the aristocrats. Now, for a long time, all of these developments were summed up in a fairly simple scenario. Louis XIV was an extremely powerful absolute monarch. He crushed all resistance in France with an iron fist. He confiscated or sheared back all of the power of the aristocracy, transferred it to bureaucrats, intendants, and other servants of the state. Meanwhile, he filled his palace at Versailles with foppish courtiers, where the nobles had to ingratiate themselves to the monarchy by learning etiquette and good manners, learning to scratch on a door rather than knock on it, and so on and so forth. And thus Louis ruled without any significant opposition. Now, as has been pointed out by several historians, there are two basic problems with this traditional scenario of Louis ruling with the iron fist and therefore no resistance. In the first place, it's just inherently implausible. I think it's very hard to explain how the dissatisfactions of provincial aristocrats, which had been deep-seated and had been present really for quite some time, how could that resentment so quickly have been turned into indifference, indeed into a kind of sycophancy? Moreover, and this is really the second problem in this scenario, the so-called foppish courtiers who replaced the martial provincial nobles were often the very same people. The rebellious Prince of Condé, whom we've encountered in an earlier lecture leading resistance to the monarchy in the middle of the 17th century, actually ended his days as a Versailles courtier, rowing the ladies around the lake and behaving like a perfect gentleman. So it seems to me we need to offer a different set of explanations for the success of Louis XIV's reign.